Three, two, one, do it. Big man, back
we
in the mitt.
We're back. We are back.
Season two.
Apologies to any of our listeners out there. Mate, it's just been mental after the summer.
It has been a challenge to get back together to do a cast together. We talked
about it.
Would you
back for good? Well, I did plow through 9 weeks of summer camps.
It's arguably the longest camp ever. I mean, we top squash and things. We did them for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, but 9 is a massive. And they were near on full every week.
Pretty Rambo, so it's pretty good. Good little team.
That means it's a good little team. There's a good product there.
So that was good fun. But then it was just straight back into all the schools and stuff like that now.
What schools are you at this year?
St. George's, ISL.
Are you going up to Clairvaux?
That's starting up again soon. Where else? The French school down in Walford-on-Sh, a couple others. So yeah, it's good fun. Busy. Sundays are booming. Really good. We've had over 100 kids down the last couple of weekends.
Because you're starting with the younger ones now.
What
do you call them? The bumblers
The bumblers, the tumblers.
The tumblers. Tumble and bumble.
Same thing, isn't it? Same difference. So we take them down to we take them, and then you have the explorers group, which is kids aged 3 to 4, and then you've also got the older ones as well. So yeah, it's good fun. Copey's got a good system in place, so makes it run like
he's good to work with. Copey, he's been helping me out with the tots and lats, and the kids just bouncing off him, and consequently, he's now even doing a few private 20-minute, 30-minute private lessons with these kids, and they really kick on when they have one of them every couple of weeks. It's
proof's in the pudding, lad. Proof's in the pudding. Anyway, on the subject of sport. Did you see the Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder?
I didn't watch it live, but I did watch the highlights the next day. Some big hits.
Mate, some old Wilder throws a big shot, doesn't he?
He does. Do you think that Fury got taken, like hit down actually as a knockout, or do you just think he got hit down with the power of the punch?
Or do you mean like he was unconscious, knocked out?
I don't think he was.
No.
But I thought the fight before in two other fights before, I think he actually got knocked out. But I don't think he got knocked out.
That there's a video on, it's doing the round, well, it's not doing the round so much anymore, but it was, so it's when Wilder lands a big left hook, and basically he's on the canvas, and you can like see his eyes and stuff, and then someone has put the Undertaker's I don't know if I said this to you before, the Undertaker's walkout music for WWE, and it's like the big gong, and then basically like this is what the Undertaker used to do, was just sit up when he was good to go and stuff, and this is literally Fury just sits up, and then you know what the guys commentating, the rest of them, they're like, oh my goodness, you know, going absolutely mad. I'll send the video on to you. It's absolute gold, cool. Though. Absolute gold. It was good to see, Fury seems to have changed his tune quite a lot, because he obviously went through that bad patch, didn't he, like, with his mental health and stuff like that.
And I hope that when he retires, or if he is going to fight, I hope that he doesn't go back into that the way that he was.
Yeah.
It was really, to be honest, it was quite sad, and I think he didn't win many friends with his behaviour and things. He was in a bit of a bad place.
Yeah.
Where does it leave Joshua now? Who's Joshua?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly. It's funny how you become he's not irrelevant, but it's almost he's been knocked off the top by Usyk, wasn't it?
Do you think he'll come? Do you think he'll come back?
I don't know. Everyone was raving about this super fight and stuff, and now it's like, well, now there's something like Dillian Whyte has to fight somebody, and then he's the mandatory challenger for Tyson Fury. Joshua's got to fight Usyk again. So there's like a lot of other stuff.
And then
that's
we'll get
happen.
This YouTube guy in there as well.
Oh, Jake Paul, mate.
Jake Paul can take. I think he's actually going to take on the brother, Tyson Fury's brother.
Oh, Tommy Fury.
Tommy Fury.
Big payday. So, but it was actually, I listened to a guy called Brendan Schwab, who's like an ex UFC guy, and he talks a bit of sense about it. And he was basically saying, like, the thing with Jake Paul is, yes, he's a, you know, he's not from this like fighting background, but obviously he's got all this cash, so he can splash out on the best coaches and he can train as much as he wants. And that's the hardest bit, is to, like, you know, that transition from going to amateur to professional is about the time you put in. And obviously you and me, if we wanted to become professional boxers now, we can only train in the mornings or in the evenings because we've got our actual jobs,
lives to get on with,
exactly, that prevent us from doing that. But because these guys don't have that, they can, you know, he can go and train for 4, 5, 6 hours a day or whatever, do all the conditioning, he's got someone to babysit his nutrition and all that sort of stuff. So it's quite interesting, he can, this just shows you that the money, when it's pumped into the training, can really, like, really kick you on, you know. Yeah. I'm not saying he's going to beat anybody,
so decent. I kept having chance that I would want to jump into the ring with any of those,
mate.
I mean, so
you couldn't pay me. You couldn't pay me. There's a film called Warrior, came out a few years ago with Tom Hardy in. Very, very good film about these two brothers. They fight in this competition, and it's a very good film. But one of the guys is a physics teacher. So he's a physics teacher, and then he's also a UFC fighter. And it's like, it's a very cool story. It's a very good film, but it's like, that's the worst thing in the world. Because I guarantee now you've got physics teachers or other teachers out there thinking they can go and jump in the ring.
No.
It's just like, yeah. They're just a different, they're a different breed, like. But yeah, that's the whole fight or flight thing. You think, you know, we've all been in little tussles and scuffles in rugby or whatever, and that, and it's all, you know, heat of the moment stuff. But you're walking out and that door shuts and it's like, all right, where's the exit?
Exactly, the exit door would be me, that's for sure. Did you play for Mets this weekend?
No, I didn't. I had a big heavy week of work, so couldn't.
Because you've had a couple of games for them,
like. Yeah, we've gone all right. They've got a new director of rugby down there, Ludovic Mercier. Okay. Might recognise him. He played for Gloucester for quite a few years, back when they won the Premiership, actually. So.
Oh, wow. John Flynn's the coach,
the legend, right? Flynn is down taking the
I'm
forward,
really pleased so. He got that
yeah
I'm
good. Really pleased good, he's good, got good that good game. To see
loves his footy,
good to see him enjoying it down there. And it's quite funny, you have obviously John would have been my coach and stuff, so there's always like that, you know, that coach player relationship. But now it's much more of a we obviously drive down in the car to training and just have a laugh, you know. He's a top bloke. Good to see you up watching, obviously Saturday's a rugby day,
Saturday afternoon
watching RCL.
Well, the weather was good, wasn't it? So it's nice. I mean, I'm not sure you're going to see me in there.
It was wunderbar
in January up at Cessonge, but I actually only got there for the second half,
probably a better half to
and
watch,
well but. Yeah, and I think it was the better half from what I heard.
But so the background with HRK, about 3 or 4 years ago. Oh no. So there's two Heidelberg teams, two big Heidelberg clubs, and they're literally over the road from each other. That's how, you know, one's the rugby club, one's the rowing club, or I don't know. One playing blue and white, one playing orange. And so HRK had a lot of money pumped into them by a guy called Peter Wilde, who is the head honcho at Capri Sun. And so he was pumping it into that, and the Germans, they had a good structure in place and blah, 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 blah. And it used to be, if you won the German League, you qualified for the qualifying event for the European Cup, not the top tier, the second tier. So it used to be called like the Parker Penn. I think it's the Challenge Cup now. But you had to play off against your teams from Romania, Georgia, or Italy. You know, the teams that hadn't qualified outright. You played a playoff and then you qualified for to play in the second tier of European rugby, which was massive. But what happened was HRK qualified. They won. I think they lost the final, but the top two teams qualify. So they lost the final or whatever, and so they qualified for the European Cup. And then your boy from Capri Sun bought out Stade Francais. Now, Stade Francais were dung at the time. They're not great now as well.
Because they were because at that moment, I believe Stade Francais were about to merge with Racing, if I believe.
I don't know. That's going back away. I'm not sure how long ago that was, but I do remember being that talk. But that aside, basically, because he had two teams, he had interests in two teams in the same competition. They threw HRK out of the competition, and then all the money got pulled, and then they've sort of been on a slow sort of. I wouldn't say they've been on a bit of a decline. About right.
I just had a quick look.
You had a quick look, our admin guy brought it up, did he?
Oh man, a proposed merger between top French sides Racing 92 and Stade Francais has been called off. So that was in 2017.
Really?
So that's when it would have been.
Maybe. Very good. Look at you all. Rugby Norse, huh?
Rugby Norse, no, I think.
And yeah, so they've sort of had a few players would stay on, and then they slowly sort of changed their whole squad and everything. And yeah, they came down, and I remember looking at the warm-up, and normally you see a team like that, there'll be a couple of big boys running around, and they didn't have any... There weren't any big lumps running around there, and it was a bit, you know, it's a bit of a. I think
so. They're not. So they're certainly not as good as what they used to be.
That, I wouldn't take anything away from RCL. You know, they got a decent setup, a decent, very good backline at the moment.
I was surprised by the lack of hand. I mean, I only saw a half, as I say, but I saw the latter half. Oh, the lack of handling errors.
You should have watched the first half, mate. There was quite a few. Maybe it just got warm or something.
Second half, I thought it was...
A dry day, got no excuse, have you?
Well, they went and put on... How many more points? They went and put on 33 more points.
31
points in the second half.
Mm.
So...
But, yeah, it was a good couple of good tries.
Nsolo plays in centre. I thought he was a seven.
He was a back rower back in the day. Or maybe he was a centre and moved to the back row. I'll ask him this weekend. We're going to Sweden... This weekend for the national team. So that's 2 years since we last played.
It's your bogey team.
Huh?
It's your bogey team.
Well, yeah, I missed that kick, but then I played quite well the next time, so.
Okay, made up for it.
Yeah, a bit of a level pie, you know. Thanks for bringing that up. yeah, it should be good. Quite a few new faces in the squad. New captain.
Who is?
Guillaume Kimmel.
He was the number eight. Was that the number
eight?
Number seven,
back rower. Younger brother of Romain, who was the captain. Guillaume's a legend. He speaks very good English as well.
When will the first game in the new stadium be?
End of November. So it'd be Czech Republic. So it'd be tough.
Will that be played at the same time as the Autumn Internationals?
I honestly couldn't tell you. I need to have a look. We're sort of just focusing on this weekend first, and then worry about the
one game at a time.
The one afterwards. Big week in the gym. Going to go and smash some more bench press here after we finish talking. You know, probably have a cheeky burrito afterwards as well. Taco shop, give them a shout out.
I noticed that looking on the social media sites with the All Blacks and Wallabies, I noticed they always have these big gym sessions. Kind of the week leading up, do they not? Why do they do that? Why are they not fine tuning, spending more time fine tuning their skills?
I think that's the thing they do though. You just don't see them doing it and stuff like that. You do call it the extras and stuff like that. You know, you train and then you do your extra skills after and that sort of thing. There's a lot of that goes on now.
I thought it would ultimately just fine tuning those skills that. The calls, let's say.
I think that's a funny one. Is especially with especially in rugby, you've got like stuff, skills that are more like closed skills. So like passing a rugby ball. Obviously, you can put pressure in, but like for a nine to pass to a ten, you know, if you got to be able to pass off the deck quickly, so you can go and practice that. Practice. Kicking at goal, kicking to touch, box kicking, that sort of thing. Throwing in the line out is a little bit different because you have to consider what the opposition are going to do and that sort of thing. But you know, a lot of people go off and practice those close skills, and unfortunately, that's a funny one because I think a lot of guys, as soon as you become an adult, the perception is that you don't go and practice your skills; you just go and train for rugby. So you just rock up to training. Yeah, it's like I would always go and practice my kicking and or do a little passing and stuff like that. And I think that's something where a lot of people fall down. Is like, it's all well and good saying you're a hooker, but a lot of people get put there because you look. There's a lot of small hookers these days because they're maybe not as big to play prop or elsewhere in the pack. So you're going to play hooker. That's dead on. You've got to be able to throw.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I can mess around and pick up a ball and throw it in if I want to just from messing around for years.
No, hooker's got it. Some people, a very fine skill.
Yeah, some people don't just don't practice it. You know, you can't pass a rugby ball. Well, don't come to me and tell me you can't serve.
Throwing the ball in the line out is crucial. I mean, I don't know how many combinations of throwing to a different number or a different, I don't know what you call it, but a different switch.
A trigger, and
maybe the opposition are attacking your line out, so you have to change and you have to adapt.
Rugby's a game of chaos. It's how you adapt to the chaos, you know. And it's, but a lot of people want to play this perfect game of rugby, but it never happened.
It never happened.
You know. Yeah. Remember the All Blacks? When they got beaten by Ireland for the first time. In Chicago, the entire week before that game, they didn't drop a single ball in all of their training sessions. Maybe there's like a mental switch where you think you're, oh, well, we haven't dropped a ball all week. We're not going to drop it. We're going to run riot today. It's just the way it goes. But I've also done some of the worst warm-ups you've ever been involved in, and then you end up playing the best because it's like, you know, you've made a mistake, so you respond to it. So it like leads into the game.
Yeah. Quite an interesting one. I played the league. The squash league has started in Luxembourg here.
You taking a few scalps?
No, people taking a few scalps off me. One young lad, Amir, who he's done a little bit of coaching with us. He's coming on really well. Got a very solid game. And anyway, well, what I was warming up against him, and he was hit on fire. He was just hitting it. And fortunately, I've been experienced enough to say, the more you hit them in the warm up, they're not all going to come out.
Yeah,
they're not going to necessarily come out when you're under pressure. And sure enough, that certainly happened for the first two sets anyway. I mean, I was all over him. I was giving him an absolute belting. I was the one hitting all the accuracy, you know, whether it was a length ball or whether I was taking it short. The accuracy and the width on it was phenomenal. Fortunately, I ran out a bit of steam and couldn't carry it through to the next to the next few sets. But and obviously my confidence naturally went as well.
Does that frustrate you as someone who played, obviously, you know, played decent level back in the day, you're frustrated because you could turn around and go and train more often and do the extra things and stuff like that.
Afterwards, it was frustrating. On the court, no, it's not. It didn't frustrate me at all so much because I knew that I was trying my best, and I just accept with myself that if I try my best, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah,
you know, I don't get wild with the opponent because just don't get frustrated side of things.
But just to jump in again there, sorry, you say not getting wild with your opponent, but I bet as a youngster you would have been a bit more fiery.
Maturity. It's maturity on a squash court, which keeps you a cool head. But at the conclusion, with
not a word that would be thrown at us too very often, would it?
Exactly.
But yeah, but
so at the end of it though, it was I was frustrated with myself, knowing that I still could be a lot better, but I just have other things. But I have to accept that I have other things in life and other choices in life. You know what? At the end of the day, on a Saturday night, I do want to drink a bottle of wine. You know, I do want to have a big meal followed by a Sunday big meal. I don't want to make a sacrifice of a diet and train that much hard. I've got other things going on. So knowing that you could be at a certain level, it is. A bit of a difficult pill to swallow it, but if you're mature enough about it, then
that's,
I think
it is what it is.
Don't get me wrong. Next time I play him in a few weeks' time or whenever that'll be, I'll give it a big crack.
Yeah, that's quite interesting.
I have to send Burnsy a call and ask for that 2-week plan to get me on top of the world.
The 2-week wonder plan. Yeah. Couple of special.
Yeah. Hey, special I tell you pills what, he's doing good work with a player called Joel Macon, Welsh number one. Joel's his fitness is up there with Paul Cole, actually, has been the two fittest athletes.
Yeah.
And they were, and Joel looks like he's a kind of a bigger built guy, but he's gotten him in brilliant shape. Is that the postman?
Are you going to go and get it?
I think I might have to.
I'll pause it here. God's sake, mate. And thank you to our sponsors there for that that break. There's always something that interrupts it, isn't there?
Yeah.
Remember, Reese did it the last time.
That was good. That one was the postman. I'm pleased he's delivered. Can't say I was really waiting for that bill to come through, but yeah.
Such is life.
That's the way it goes.
Obviously, we're going to, well, as I say, we're just scraping the surface here for getting back into it all, getting back into swing of things, getting used to listening to our own voices as well, you know. But moving forward, obviously, delve into more of the Luxembourgish sport. Recap over the weekend. I'll obviously get back some feedback about how we get on against Sweden. What's it like having the you know, obviously because we had that big break, and then is COVID in the schools and all that sort of stuff? How's that working now?
Well, there's a new law passing tonight, isn't it? And that's going to be the challenging one for sport,
yeah,
and even for our squash and fitness centre. So you have these COVID passes, don't we? We have these QR codes.
Mm-hmm.
So if our members come in, or guests come in, then they have to show that they've had the double vaccination.
Yeah.
The recovery. Yeah.
That was the chair, just to be clear.
And then there's also they could do a PCR test as well. But they're no longer for free, those PCR tests. So you have to pay like $100.
Yeah, quid. I need to book one tonight, actually, for tomorrow, because we have to do one before we fly on Thursday.
But you've been vaccinated.
Yeah, but you still have to do a PCR test before you fly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because we're going to Sweden. So
that must be Swedish. The rules
could well be.
I hope I don't get stung with that, because I'm going to Lisbon this weekend on Thursday. So
I think Portugal's a bit more chilled out, a bit more Wild West out there, isn't it? You know,
I've never been to Portugal before. But anyway, I think coming back to the COVID situation, it's going to make it even more challenging now, because there are still individuals that are not vaccinated.
Yeah,
and
anti-vaxxers.
Yeah, but you know, we can't make someone be vaccinated, but at the same time we want the world to move on. So
I know, personally,
from my sake of it, I don't. Yeah, as long as the world moves on and help protect. I mean, we still carry COVID, of course. We all know the potential risks.
Yeah, we all know the
crap that goes with it. But anyway, it's always individual choices. But I feel sorry for these for these people that want to, or for our members, in fact, that want to play squash. But they unless they pay €100 to get a PCR test, they can't do it. So I'm not sure what will eventually come of that. And I know there might be a bit of
just trying to make their money back now, aren't they?
Perhaps so. Perhaps. But I think there's other things that the government could have done.
So you're saying about Portugal, I went on a good stag do there, but I won't say anything more about that, but I was on another stag do in the summer there for Sam Sturley, and he's happily married now, congratulations to him and Emma. And on the fourth day of the India versus England test match,
I think you did tell me this,
and we went so we'd obviously had a few pims early doors. Went to Headingley, amazing ground. But India lost about 8 wickets in about 20 minutes or something. So we've rocked up, and I tell you what,
so it's only going to be a half day of cricket.
Well, not even a half day. We got in.
It was all over on the fourth day. Yeah.
So we got in and found our seats, and you know, you sit and watch a bit of it, and I tell you what, when like, you know, Anderson's pinging it down, you can barely see the ball, and like, God knows what that'd be like. You know, I wouldn't want to face that, mate. No. So they kept losing wickets and stuff, and then they lost Kohli, which was the big one. And then, like, they've got a couple of wickets to go. It's not even lunchtime. So you get half your ticket refunded. But the other thing that's really weird is they close all the bars in the ground as soon as the cricket finishes. So it's not like you can just stay there and crow and you just got to leave. But yeah, so they've got about a couple of wickets.
So even all the sausage stands and all those, they all close. Because normally
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And so they've got a couple of wickets to lose, and then all of a sudden you can just hear this racket coming from one of the stands. Now there's this park called the Western Terrace, and that's basically where it gets loosey goosey, shall we say. So there's a lot of stag dudes and stuff over there. Next thing you know, you see this fella dressed up as a giant inflatable pig just running down the steps from the corner and then charging across the front of the stand, and everyone's going mental. And then, mate, there's about 25 blokes all dressed up as butchers with meat cleaners chasing him down. Everyone's going mental, and like even the players are looking around to see what's going on.
Please tell me he's squealing like a
brilliant, absolutely brilliant. That was hilarious to watch.
Was it you or was it William that also told me about the dress up for the where 12 guys were dressed up as seagulls. Yeah, and the groom to be was a chip.
And they chased him around. That's a good one. That's the thing. If you got to try and outdo it for the get people like us talking about it. You know?
Hilarious. Have you seen any of the tennis? Did you see that over the summer? You didn't see any of the US Open or so between. We had a few. There was the big controversial one, which just after we finished the season one, there number 13 it was. Thought it was going to be unlucky, but fortunately we bounced back. Osaka, Naomi Osaka, she didn't do the interview. She didn't do her, or she withdrew from the French Open because she wasn't prepared to be interviewed after after her matches.
Oh, really?
She said because the questions were too uncomfortable.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was an interesting one, and it followed on from what we talked about last season with the interviewer who was
Didn't show any empathy towards the player and players. Stuff like that. Yeah, yeah, they're almost trying to trip them up, aren't they?
Absolutely, and I feel sorry for her, but at the end of the day, as an athlete, you've got to your responsibility is to talk about the game and the match and the emotions and the experiences that they felt. That's a must. You've got to sell it to the sponsors and to the game. So you can't just not participate in a tournament yet not be open to the press. But at the same time, the press have got a responsibility because they're trying to trip some of these players up, or they're trying to make them look like idiots, to be honest.
Obviously, I love my films and stuff. You seen Rush, the Formula One one about James Hunt?
No.
And there's a bit where, well, I don't know if this is based on a true story, but you know, remember Niki Lauda? And he was the one that had the horrendous crash and all the burns and stuff like that. And in his first race back, he's being questioned. And I don't think it was his first race back. I think it was the last race of the season when Lauda had won so many points that James Hunt had caught up then. And if Hunt beat him, then he was going to be world champion, or if Lauda won, he was going to be world champion. So they're asking him, and the guy's like, the guy says something along the lines of, "Oh, did you do you think your marriage can survive this after what's happened to your face and everything?"
Really?
Yeah. So I need to find out if this is true. And he basically tells him where to go, and then James Hunt takes him into the room and basically gives him a hide-in afterwards. I must find out about that. That's mad. But you imagine if something like that happened now.
There's a few things that happened. I brought up that tennis because over the summer there was a few things. The other one was Djokovic. I'm not sure did you watch that? Well, the Olympics. We were talking about it, weren't we? The build up to Tokyo. Djokovic's behaviour was crazy. I mean, he threw his racket again. That even though there was no spectators, it still went very close to a young ball boy. And I just wondered what your opinions were on Djokovic, who's actually quite a nice guy. He's you know, and he was very close to a lot of the lads, but his behaviour recently has been.
I mean, it's all very funny. Like basically,
it's almost like he's losing his way. It's almost like he's losing his way.
It's but
when
child being, toys out the pram, but it doesn't really matter what I think or what you think because we don't pay the bills at the end of the day. We're not in charge, but. How many times do you see guys have tantrums and stuff like that? And they're like, oh, that's disgusting behaviour. He shouldn't be that. He shouldn't be a role model. Next week, it's something else and nobody remembers what's happened. He might get a slap on the wrist. Oh, yeah, you have to pay, you know, $10,000 fine or something like that. But it's nothing to these guys. Like, you really want to make an example of someone, throw the book at them.
So a little bit like England in the football, UEFA. The book got thrown at them last night. They got a one-match ban. I think they call it a stadium ban, or
no fans
in the stadium, and £100,000. I mean, what's £100,000 to the FA? Nothing. What's the point? What's even a stadium? A one match stadium ban? Nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, 5,000 people stormed the stadium. It was anarchy. I know someone that was at the game, and he said it was out of control.
Yeah.
I mean.
Oh, this is the thing that happened in the Euro final, wasn't it?
In the Euro final. It was absolutely...
It's just poor organisation. Like, you should...
I mean, how can England be allowed to something like losing a potential bid to host a European championship? That's a punishment.
Yeah, that is.
That's a really big punishment.
Yeah.
Not...
But didn't they... They didn't... I think they changed... They changed, like, the law or the legislation or the rulings around COVID before the final... Because it was like a proper Euro league, Euro.
67,000 fans were allowed in for the final.
But they were allowed. But they were all played in different countries, weren't they?
They were. Yeah.
And I know because we went out for the sevens and we were in Hungary. And I know. I think who was telling me about it? It might have been Max Kennens, and he was saying that basically under normal legislation, there weren't going to be very few fans are going to be allowed to watch the final at Wembley. So they changed it. So they, because obviously, if they're like, well, if there's only going to be 2,000 fans here, then we'll go and have it out in Budapest, and we can get 80,000 people in the stadium or something weird like that. And it's just like,
so they bumped it up to 67,000.
How convenient.
Meanwhile, 200,000 people are outside the stadium.
Yeah,
the streets were. It was anarchy. Anarchy, anarchy, anarchy.
But yeah, as I say, you know, until you really want to, you want to scare somebody, throw the book at them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like these whole things about rugby, oh, he's got good behaviour, he's got good, you know, he hasn't got any previous and stuff, and it's like, it doesn't matter.
Also, it comes back to drugs and drugs and sport.
It's only a four-year ban, isn't it? You can
come back. I mean, yeah. What's with that? Just ban them for good.
Yeah, exactly.
Or give them their own league.
Yeah, that's one we talked about before. Yeah,
drug-only league.
Get them all geared up, and then let them go mad, and see how quick you can go.
So, well, then see how quickly they will curl over afterwards as well.
What's interesting is like where you got the guy who plays. If you've seen Game of Thrones, he's called the Mountain. So Hafthor Bjornsson, and Eddie Hall.
That's
so they
right,
were
the two
big
fellas, big
fellas in World's Strongest Man, and now they're both cutting the weight. And getting down to ready to box each other in like, you know, it's been built up. And I know the guy, Hafthor, he's fought a few blokes. Eddie Hall's injured, I think, at the moment. But like, it just goes to show you, like, if you dangle that money carrot in front of them, why wouldn't you change your sport? You know, and it's like, it's happening a lot with the YouTube stuff like that. It's like, you know, boxing, we're still playing footsie here, mate. But yeah, you know, these guys are having money thrown at them, no problem. And like, why wouldn't you take on... If you're a journeyman in boxing and you've only then why wouldn't you take on a fight like that? You know, biggest. It was like the guy Ben Askren. He got the biggest payday of his career for fighting Jake Paul, and he'd been in the UFC his whole life.
Why not? Hey, one last one before we sign off. The 7-minute row.
Yeah.
You said there was a challenge. What time do you do it? What distance do you do in 7 minutes? Wasn't you said there was that workout where you had a 7 minute? Apparently, it's like
a seven minute row,
but there's a challenge though.
Press.
There's a seven. How far can you row in 7 minutes?
I'm not sure. I'd need to look into that. I'll probably die about halfway through. Well, what is it? Any? I think 140 is good for 500, isn't it? 130, 140. So, I could put my maths to the test here. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm going to give it a go before.
Well, I tell you what,
we get in touch
with before we do it, you do it and I'll do it and we'll see where we're at, all right?
And we will take a photo of our results.
Yeah, photo image. Proof. 67%.
I'll take the sediment. Because I jumped on the rower the only reason last week for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
I only did 6 minutes. Boy.
Had to cardiac arrest.
Oh. I couldn't get my feet out of the bracket afterwards. I was gagging like I'd had my head cut off. You know, it's horrible.
Well, we'll see, mate. But yeah.
All right, good to see you. Good luck in Sweden, and
good to have you back, mate. And see you next week.
Cheers.